Hi, this is Vic Morin.
Hi, this is Neil Smith, and we're your hosts for NHL Wraparound Podcast. Join us for an exclusive virtual kickoff event for the 1990 Forever, a five-part series commemorating the 30th anniversary of the New York Rangers Stanley Cup Championship. It's going to be on Thursday, June 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Zoom.
There are limited spaces available, so go to NHLWraparound.com to sign up.
Welcome to the NHL Wraparound Podcast, featuring Neil Smith, President, General Manager of the 1994 Stanley Cup champion New York Rangers, and longtime ESPN NHL veteran Vic Morin. Together, they share no-nonsense opinions on news and issues around the National Hockey League. Whether you're a casual or diehard fan, each episode of NHL Wraparound will leave you more informed. Now, here's your hosts, Neil and Vic.
Welcome to NHL Wraparound. Vic Morin, Neil Smith, and today we will be covering the second round preview of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And once again, we'll be joined by ESPN's John Buccigross. But first, a word from Igrey.
From Howdy Hughes, from Bellevue to Bedard, we're your source for game-worn jerseys. Go to mygray.com, M-E-I-G-R-A-Y.com, to start your collection today. Get real. Get it from Igrey.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. Vic and Neil with you. And Neil, how do you like the playoff format?
You know what? It's not my favorite, but I did some research into, if the format was the way that I think it should be, which is 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, 3 versus 6, and of course, 4 versus 5, how would that have changed this year's playoffs? And when I did the work, and it's not mind-boggling work, it's just you go and take a look at the standings and see how it would have been. The first round in the East would have been exactly the same as it was. It would have been New York and Washington, Carolina and the Islanders, Florida and Tampa, and Boston and Toronto, even if you went 1-8 and 2-7. In the West, there would have been two different matchups. It would have still been Dallas versus Vegas, but it would have been Winnipeg and LA. And that's where Winnipeg sort of gets screwed on this, because let's face it, LA would have been a less formidable opponent than Colorado, who finished just a couple points behind them. It still would have been Vancouver and Nashville, but it would have been Colorado versus Edmonton. Now, one could say, well, that's still going to kick out some really good team in Colorado versus Edmonton. And you'd be right. In the second round, if you went the way that I would like to see it, New York would now be playing Boston, who is the fourth best Eastern team right now at this moment. And Carolina, the second best Eastern team, would be playing Florida, the third best Eastern team. In the West, would have been exactly the what it is. It would have been Dallas versus Colorado and Vancouver and Edmonton. So all we want to say about the way we don't like the format or the way all this other stuff, it wouldn't have made too much of a difference. Just poor Winnipeg. They got a harder deal.
Another team that got a hard deal was the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I remember on our first show, I had made mention that probably no franchise sucks more air out of a room than the Maple Leafs. So we're going to do it one more time this season. And they certainly put up a noble effort, particularly in games 5, 6, and 7, only to fall in overtime on Saturday night on the David Pastrnak goal. And once again, it's the same ending. What did we find out about Toronto? Well, without Austin Matthews for games 5 and 6, they actually answered the bell pretty well, doing things they normally don't do. They were hard on the puck. They had tight defensive gaps. They had good stick and passing lane containment. And they did a hell of a job facing adversity there. Now, here's the reality. Next season, this team is going to use 5% more of their salary cap on their big four forwards: Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Mitch Marner, and William Nylander. Even though the cap is going up by $4.2 million 53.2% of the cap is committed to those four players. And Brad Treveling was certainly left a mess financially from Kyle Dubas. So what does this team actually do going forward? Now, you've got long-term extensions kicking in next season with Matthews and Nylander. Tavares and Marner are only signed through next season. So the question is now the time to move one or both of them to clear up space? So certainly stay tuned as the saga of the Toronto Maple Leafs continues. This one-timer segment has been brought to you by the Ninsel Wealth Partners. Our goal is to be your primary source of financial advice. Our mission is to provide quality strategies customized to your needs. We recognize that you place your trust in our ability to help you achieve your goals. To us, there's no greater honor, and without question, there's no greater responsibility. Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. And now it is my pleasure to welcome back the ultimate 200-foot player for the NHL on ESPN, John Buccigross. John, welcome back and thank you for joining Neil and I again.
Good to be here, boys. How are we doing?
We're doing pretty well. So before we do the deep dive here, we've got to kind of look back on how we did in the first round with our predictions. And Neil is atop the leaderboard, picking 6 of 8 series correct. You and I had 5 of 8 series correct. Maple Leafs one shot away from advancing. They lost. And if Nashville knew that hockey games were 60 minutes as opposed to 57, we probably would have had that series also. So
I picked Vancouver in my ESPN predictions. So I don't, maybe I switched up on you, but I thought I was 6-2, but I'll take your word for it. I must have said Nashville with you guys, but.
Yeah, I went back. The tape didn't lie. But Neil, you know, the one difference was you had Colorado and John and I took the bait on Winnipeg.
I've always been a Colorado fan this season. I don't know, just from the first time I saw them play the Islanders, they dominated them so badly. And MacKinnon and Makar were so amazing. I don't know. I've just, even with the Georgiev up and down, I've still believed in them.
Well, you now atop the leaderboard. So we'll see if John and I can make up some ground in round two here. So we're going to start off with the Rangers and the Hurricanes, and they've already played one game in this series, and really not a lot to unpack from their opening round series. Rangers sweeping Washington and Carolina taking out the Islanders in 5. This matchup has been expected for a long time. Game one on Sunday afternoon, New York wins by a 4-3 score. Neil, I'm going to start with you. Anything about that result surprise you for the Rangers to open, you know, 6 days, full days off for the Rangers, 4 days off for the Hurricanes, and Rangers get out of the gate quickly?
The one thing that was surprising to me was how dominant their power play was. And Zibanejad, of course, with the 2 quick goals and both on the power play, I believe. And just the fact that that rolled so well, that hasn't been doing that well for them. I mean, it's been a very, very good power play, but not like that. That was just incredible. And that set, that basically won them the game, in my opinion, right there. Shesterkin was Shesterkin. Anderson let in the one bad goal at the end, the 4th goal. You know, and Panarin, I was waiting to see how he would do. We talked about this, guys, when we did the first round. I never heard his name except for when he scored the goal. But the thing that surprised me was the Rangers getting that production, especially out of Zibanejad, that quickly in the playoffs.
John, what did you see yesterday that, you know, maybe surprised you or just didn't surprise you? I mean, Rangers, 2 power play goals in 22 total seconds of power play time yesterday. But I can't think that they're going to survive well in this series if they're taking 5 penalties a game against a dynamic team like Carolina.
Right. And that's where obviously Carolina just, they want to probably have the special teams be a push. I mean, if the Rangers get a power play goal, let's make sure we score a power play goal and let's beat them 5-on-5. You know, with their forecheck, with their aggressive play. I just don't think, you know, Carolina has a lot of dynamic offensive players. You know, Kuznetsov was a great acquisition for them because he probably is their most talented guy just from a pair of, you know, pair of hands and creating and high level guy who's done it in the Stanley Cup final. You know, Natchez certainly has a lot of that kind of talent. He looked good yesterday, actually, in game. I thought Marty Natchez looked good, and maybe he can be the take that unexpected step up, because that's what you need this time of year. You need some real one-on-one dynamic players. Aho is really just kind of a blue-collar grinder. He's not a high-talent guy. Gensel, probably maybe, you know, kind of that same realm as an Aho, you know, where he had Crosby doing so much of that work, and Gensel can make it pay off. You want guys who can make it pay off. You need that too. You know, Jarvis is close. Again, he plays more of a grinding, play with the lead kind of guy. So I just worry about Carolina. They're definitely better than they've ever been in terms of advancing in the playoffs because of their offensive talent. But obviously now it's about the draw for them, having to beat the Rangers, then possibly the Panthers in two straight series. That's going to be hard. But I think they do have the bones to do it.
I thought it was interesting also that Jake Gensel has long had a reputation when he was with Pittsburgh of just being a Ranger killer. And it looked like there was just a little bit extra attention to him yesterday. You know, a lot of after the whistle stuff going on. And just to let him know, you know what? This isn't Pittsburgh anymore. We're going to be in your grill every chance we get.
Yeah, he's light, right? He plays kind of light. He's not a big, heavy guy. So, and you can get to him a little bit. I'm sure they're going to try to get to him, like you said, like that. Like you said, though, got to be careful taking the penalties, four or five penalties. They get that puck moving around. They have people who can finish. They have, I guess, Nason down low, and they have Burns at the top. Gensel, obviously, on the wing. Not a real big one-time guy. That's one thing they don't have. You know, that's what Zibanejad is such a threat. On that, well, yeah, I always put, you know, I put Zibanejad the last 3-4 years right in that Pastrnak, Stamkos, Ovechkin group. I mean, the numbers are there. I mean, the power play goal numbers were there for Zibanejad. And that's one thing Carolina doesn't have. You know, Svechnikov isn't, again, what is he? And so their power play from that respect, there isn't a big, huge threat in that regard. It's more of a grinding, Mason at the net, guys in the bumper, stuff like that. Aho on the side, slapping it in.
And you know, I want to say on that Gensel thing, Vic, I don't believe in that nonsense about he was a Ranger killer and all this stuff. Peter Laviolette wasn't even the coach when he last killed the Rangers, and most of the players weren't even there. I think whether you got Gensel onto the Carolina Hurricanes or you went out and got Brett Hull, whoever came into that lineup late, the Rangers were going to make sure that he was told, you're not going to mess around with us. And I'm sure they did the same to Aho the whole night. You get skilled players like that, you got to make sure that you're trying everything you can to intimidate them off their game.
And I think one of the things that the Rangers did do when they were killing penalties yesterday was they really pressured hard on the points, and they tried to keep the Carolina power play units on their backhands as much as possible to make these plays as difficult as they possibly could. So I thought that was effective. But again, I don't think they can go there five times a game and expect to really succeed in this series. So we'll see what happens there. But I did want to get into the goaltending. And I don't think that Freddie Anderson had a shot on any of the first three goals. But boy, that fourth goal leaking through him is a killer. And he's going to need to equal or exceed Shesterkin's performance in order for Carolina to survive this series.
Yeah. No, I think Anderson is going to have to step up. But in fairness to him, guys, and I know that this is where we all question Carolina is, do they have the goaltending? I mean, we did it all season long. Do they have the goaltending? Well, you know what? Since he came back from that blood disorder, he's been as good as anybody in the league. I don't mean that numerically he's exactly the same save percentage or thing, but he has backstopped an excellent team that was only a few points behind the President's Trophy and done a real good job of it. So, yes, he did let in a leaky one yesterday, and that ended up being the winning goal. But Shesterkin will probably let a leaky one in at some point. I mean, the one that went off of that went flying over his shoulder. Remember, there wasn't anything he could do about that because it took such a weird bounce. Yeah, but I just think Anderson is the question mark for sure, only because he hasn't done it in the past. But I do like Anderson. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I agree. He's been good for 2 months, and he's got to be feeling good about his game. We never know how a guy truly feels about his health, his energy, how he's feeling right now, and is he getting worn down a little bit? It's possible. But yeah, overall, I think they should be happy. Like I said, with their team, I think overall they're built pretty good. It's just, you know, playing that dynamic offensive game. And again, now it could be killing penalties. Will they have to change their structure a bit against the Rangers? Because it's such a well-oiled power play that can cause major damage.
John, I really like their depth too. The one thing about Carolina that I think is really important is that they have a really, in my opinion, a really good bottom six forwards. I think as good bottom six as you can put together. I mean, that's going back to the teams that I've had. I remember the successful teams were the ones that had the guys that could chip in with the Noonans and Mattos and people like that, that would come through when the checkers on the other team were making sure that our big guys couldn't come through. Well, that bottom six could come through. And I see that with Carolina more than I do with the Rangers.
I know, talking to Rod Brindamore, though, down the stretch, we did a game on Long Island, the playoff game, and he really was concerned about not having Pesci and Fast. You know, those guys are just, they give him even more of that depth. And I know they like Foss as that veteran bottom six guy that you said, that's the kind of guy you kind of win with. And so we'll see if Jack Drury can keep this up. You wonder, is he going to wear down a bit? And on the back end, Tony DeAngelo, he gives you some offensive flash, but Pesci was just a solid right-handed shot D. So those are two big, probably under the radar key injuries for Carolina that you know, hurt that depth you talk about, Neil.
Yeah, you're right.
John, how do you see this series?
Yeah, again, it's just razor tight. You know, I got the Rangers in seven just because they seem to have some mojo. You know, Trocheck against his former team is good fuel. Panarin has these moments of his career year that he had. There's a lot of, they've been through stuff. You know, Zibanejad and the whole gang just kind of has a core about them. And then you always add new pieces every year, every season. And even Shesterkin. So there's enough there, you know, that I think they'll be able to squeeze through. But it's tight, man. It could really, truly go either way. These are two high-level teams. We've seen a big jump in play. I didn't think the first round was all that scintillating in terms of quality of play and quality of games. But I'm hoping now for a big step up in round two as we see all the good teams, they all moved ahead. Like, you know, it's pretty much the favorites all did what they had to do in round one.
Great. And I see this series the same way. Rangers and seven. Neil, how about you?
Well, I'm going to go the other way. I see Carolina. And the only thing I'm going to wuss out on is I'm going to say seven as well. So I'm going to say Carolina, but I'm going to say seven only because it's a much safer. I was just doing the math as you guys were talking. And to say Carolina in six means there's only five games left and they got to win four of them. I'm not sure I can see that happening. But I do think Carolina.
All right. Well, let's move on to the other series in the Eastern Conference, and that is Florida and Boston. And quick turnaround for the Bruins coming off a real scintillating Game 7 overtime win against the Maple Leafs on Saturday night. And interesting thing here is, you know, I was kind of underwhelmed by the Bruins during the course of the entire series, and particularly the last three games. But now, you know, it's a fresh start. And oh, by the way, while nobody was looking, they did go 4-0 against the Panthers during the regular season, John.
That's right. They did a good matchup. You know, it's a decent matchup for the Bruins in that the at least a regular season matchup, if you look at it that way, because it is two different sports almost. The Panthers aren't a high level octane offensive team. And, you know, then I think they were 11th in the league in goals. The Bruins were 12th. They're both two very good goal prevention teams. You know, they prevent goals well. I think Florida was number two, Boston number six. So on paper, it looks pretty good. My concern with the Bruins was just having playoff scoring. If Marchand and Pastrnak don't score, they're in big trouble. I mean, Zaka has yet to score a playoff goal in his career. We're up on 19 games now. Coyle's got 3 in his last 35. He's just not a good offensive player. We saw him rip that wrist shot that certainly could have won game 5 at the post. And so he can do that. He's a good skater, really good defensive player, sturdy, big body. I like those kinds of guys in the playoffs. That's why the Beecher is an effective guy. Again, he'll never score, but he's just a big body who can skate. He gets in the way. Leave the ice with no goals against. That's a win in the playoffs. When you make a line change, you go to the bench and they didn't score against you, that's a win. It's like U.S. Open golf. Par's your friend. Just make pars. And then occasionally something can happen. So Marchand and Pasternak each had a point in the first 4 games. They're up 3-1. Neither scores in 5 and 6. They lose. Pasternak gets the goal in overtime. They win. So it really comes down to them. And for them, the power play has to be at 35% of a chance against the Panthers, I think. Because 5-on-5, I don't see them generating very much offense at all.
And the Panthers are the kind of team that they're going to give you those opportunities. I mean, they're going to play in your face. They're going to take their penalties. And, you know, whereas in the first 4 games of the series, the Bruins' power play was excellent. It slipped towards the end. And if Florida's going to give them those opportunities, certainly Boston is going to have to jump through that window in order to make this a competitive series.
I think that I was saying the other day that, you know, when you get dominant players on teams, for example, Panarin, for example, Pasternak, for example, Matthews, and those guys get stopped. John, you just went through the players and on the Boston Bruins who can't score. They don't score. And then in this game the other night, game 7 against Toronto, Marchand didn't have a shot on net in that game. And, you know, you're going like, oh my goodness, like, you know, they're struggling to score. Pasternak did come through in overtime with a nifty little goal, not a Pasternak type goal normally. But you do got to worry about the Boston Bruins and not being able to score. Swayman literally stood on his head. But they're going to face a goalie now in goalie Bob that can do that at the other end. And I just think that Florida, I really like Jim Montgomery, so I hate to say this, but I think that they're going to crush Boston. I really think they're going to crush Boston.
I think the potential's there for a sweep. I agree.
Well, John, I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zaka. And of course, that's a big departure from a year ago with Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci there, where, you know, you had a solid 1-2. And it just feels to me that Coyle and Zaka, they're like 2-3s. On most teams. And I think maybe that's where the biggest void is down the middle, that for the rest of the playoffs, however long Boston's in there, they're going to have a hard time matching up against any team down the middle in terms of real, you know, offensive depth.
Right. They have probably 3 number 3 centers, Zaka, Coyle, Frederick, who's turned to a good NHL player. And then Boqvist is their 4th line center. That 4th line's actually been very good. You know, the Maroon, Boqvist, Beecher line, they win their shifts. Every time they're going out, they are winning. Their expected goals, they're out shooting, everything. So that's been a good 4th line for them. But yeah, and regular season-wise, Coyle and Zaka was not much of a drop-off from Krejci and Bergeron. Very similar numbers across the board. Krejci just stopped scoring goals as he aged. Still could set people up, but just with no... And Marchand's going to start to fall into that territory. He turns 36 next week, Brad Marchand. He's little. So it's going to be hard for him to keep this up. You can't rely. He's just a great leader. He kept the culture going. He's still an excellent, shifty, hard-nosed player who can help create. But in terms of finish, he's got it hard for him to finish now going forward in his career in the playoffs and now the regular season, probably starting next year when he's 36 and a half. So it's obviously he's towards the end. So it really, so much falls on Pasternak. He didn't look that good last round, but he's such a, again, another guy who plays so hard. Dirty areas, doesn't matter what his face looks like, takes hits, gives hits, chippy, a little bit chippy as well, which is cool, which you like from your players. So, yeah, so, and, you know, and on the back end, they're lucky. Hampus Lindholm suddenly showed up and had his first good game in about 3 months. And he was a real good game. He scored the big goal. He scored the big goal to tie it, to keep hope alive. Cause as that could, as it was, as you know, as you guys know, when you score a goal in a big, tight playoff game, it's 1-0. You want that to keep going as long as you can, because the other team will get tighter and tighter. When the team scores 3 minutes later to tie it, man, now you're right back to even standing. You don't give them a chance to stress out and choke on their own. So that was a big goal by Lindholm. And then the beautiful pass. He recognized Pasta had speed to beat the 1-3-1 Maple Leaf trap that they were running. Perfect. Karam in the corner. Pastrnak actually didn't get a lot on that back, and he kind of flubbed it. It rolled over the pad. It wasn't even a good, clean Pasta roof job. You could tell he's just off for whatever reason. But if he finds it, and the power play finds it, and you know, these guys start picking their spots, and you steal a game early, you never know. But yeah, I really do think this is a Panthers in five, possibly four, but probably I'd give the Bruins one game with their character, but I can't imagine it going more than five games.
Well, even though we're tipping our hand here, I do just want to bring up one final point on this series, in that I see a little bit of a role reversal here, where last year Florida came in as this enormous underdog against the Bruins team that had set the league win and point records. And they were the one team that weren't scared to just get right in the Bruins' face and try to get them into an alley fight. This year, I think when Florida slipped a little bit at the end, some of the success their opponents had was kind of kicking sand in the face of the bully. And I think this year, is it the Bruins that try to get the Panthers into the alley fight to make this maybe a little bit more tightly contested series? Neil, you first.
I don't think so. I think that the Panthers are going to play the way they've played since last season. And it's not to say that the Bruins can't fight with them in the alley. Charlie McAvoy, I love him, the way he plays. He's plays so darn hard, and Marchand, and you can go on and on. They can do that. The problem is, I think Florida's got a little bit more of everything that they got. They got a little bit, they got the alley cat in them, but then they also got, you know, they're just better in so many different places. They don't have Pasternak, but I mean, Barkov's playing the best hockey he's ever played, in my opinion. And you've got, you know, the Tkachuk factor is undeniable on that team. So I'm like John. I'm taking Florida in five and giving Boston one game, only because I have a lot of respect for them.
I think we're across the board on that. And also, John, possibility Sam Bennett gets back at some point in this series, perhaps.
Yeah, he's a great playoff bully. And that helps them so much. Like, because if we were to have a fantasy draft of these two teams, you know, Barkov would probably go first, maybe. Because he's just that center guy, 200-foot guy. Okay, then say Pasta goes second. The third player is going to be Tkachuk. The fourth player is going to be Reinhardt. The fifth player might be Gustav Forsling, who's the most underrated, underpaid defenseman in the game, a shutdown 101 guy, not a lot of offense. But you start stacking these Panthers up. Their top six and their bottom six is just a good, efficient, smart, well-skating team. And yeah, for the Bruins to get in the alley, and so a couple of those guys can do that. Neil mentioned McAvoy. He is such a – he just will hit anything during the playoffs. It's kind of fun to watch. Pretty old school. You know, Frederick will get in your face, Beechers. But, you know, they got Tkachuk, and they got, you know, and but I really do think Sam Bennett's a big key to this team going forward. They need his bully skating factor. He gives them because he's a great fighter. You know, he's like the best fighter, one of the best fighters in the NHL. When you have that on your team, that just makes everybody seem a little bit bigger. They'll be fine anyway in the alley fight with Tkachuk, but Bennett gives them a little more testosterone. He gives them a little more masculinity when he's out there.
All right, so it's a clean sweep for us that we all like Florida in five games. So that wraps up the East. We'll come back with the West, but first, a word from Migray.
Time now for a quick shout-out to our sponsor. NHL Wraparound is brought to you by Migray, your source for game-worn jerseys. Head to Migray.com to get your collection started today. Get real, get it from Migray. NHL Wraparound subscribers can take 10% off any hockey jersey when they order at mygray.com and use the coupon code WRAP10. Don't forget that coupon code WRAP10.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. John Buccigross from ESPN joining us once again. And the Dallas Stars getting probably a short break, only a day, much like the Bruins in the Eastern Conference. They're going to open up against Colorado on Tuesday. And Colorado taking 3 out of 4 games this year against the Dallas Stars. This is their 6th playoff meeting all time. Last time they met in the bubble in 2020, and Dallas survived there. So what about Peter DeBoer? 8-0 in game 7s in finishing off Vegas on Sunday evening, John.
Impressive. Like I said, the guy's never without a paycheck since he started coaching in the NHL. He loses a job, he gets a job right away. The paychecks don't stop for Peter DeBoer, and you can see why. Even when he got fired midseason, he was hired midseason, the same season, never stopped. So he's impressive. A calm guy, good in the room, just great respect, really fun guy to talk to, really loose and silly, and just gives an air of confidence and professionalism. And the players obviously follow. He's obviously coached very good teams as well. That's another good reason to stick around. But yeah, Dallas is this is a strong unit for sure. They had a great regular season. Going forward, my concern with Dallas is generating high-end offense from guys who get regular season numbers, but it might be tougher in the postseason. Robertson, Pavelski, things like that. They're going against a juggernaut offensively in Colorado. So if they're going to win, they're going to have to, you know, do what Winnipeg did, and that is slow down. They have to win defensively. They have to win with defense. And that was probably a bad sign for Winnipeg. Even though they won game one, the fact it was 7-6, that's the worst thing that could have happened. You know, once that's that kind of game, they're not going to win a series against Colorado playing a game 7-6. That first win needed to be 2-1, 3-1 with an empty netter. That's how Winnipeg was going to beat Colorado. And Dallas better not fall into the same trap. If they win game 7-1, they might lose 4 in a row.
Well, Neil, I thought perhaps the most impressive forward that nobody's going to talk about in the opening round was Wyatt Johnson, who 4 goals, 3 assists, but it seemed every game he was getting some good looks, and he literally saved the series for Dallas when they were down 2-0, and that game went late into the first overtime, and he scored the sharp angle goal to win that game and get Dallas back in the series. He had 27 shots in the opening round, but conversely, between Pavelski, Roope Hintz, Jamie Benn, Matt Duchene, and Tyler Seguin, 3 goals in total. And one of those was an empty netter by Hintz. And to John's point, there's no way that Dallas is going to be able to survive this series unless these guys start picking up some of the slack.
Well, do you guys remember what I said about the Winnipeg Colorado series, and that I said it would be a battle of MacKinnon versus Hellebuck? And that MacKinnon would rather die than lose. And I thought that's just the way I could see it, was that, you know, this great big number 29 trying to will himself past the Vezina Trophy, probably Vezina Trophy winning goaltender in Hellebuck. And I see this series as being Gorgiev, and that's it. And can he play equal to Ottinger? That's all. Don't have to go much higher than Ottinger. If you can go head to head and be even with Ottinger, I think it's game over for Dallas, because I don't think their lineup in front of Ottinger compares to the lineup in front of Georgiev. I do think that Dallas, if they find Georgiev napping, or they can make Colorado pull Georgiev in a game and lessen the confidence that Colorado has, because they're pretty cocky bunch, as they should be. They're so good offensively. And I just think it comes down to that one thing. And if Georgiev plays up to the level that he has played in the past and maybe that he played against Winnipeg. I see Colorado. And by the way, about Wyatt Johnson, not to ignore your question, a 20-year-old. Like, it's hard to believe, guys. This is a 20-year-old. I was starting college playing at Western Michigan when I was 20 and trying to be a star in Western Michigan. This guy's a star in the NHL playoffs. I mean, think about it. 20 years old. Wouldn't you love to be him?
Hey, John, what about Val Nichushkin with potting seven in that opening round? And boy, you know, we talk about McKinnon, we talk about Rantanen, and we talk about Makar. And oh, by the way, this guy rolls a lucky seven in round one against Winnipeg. And that just makes an incredible offense that more fearsome.
A guy who was waived by Dallas, first round draft pick. Great talent, couldn't score a goal. Like, this is the kind of guy a scout and a GM salivates over. Boy, this guy's 6'4". He's rangy. He can skate. We picture this guy in the postseason. Like, we're trying to draft and develop for championships, not regular season. I'm not going to take this 5'6" guy from Boston College. I want this Russian, this 6'5" raw, you know, material that we can hopefully turn into something. Dallas couldn't. They waive him. Goodbye. Can't even trade him. Colorado picks him up, and now he signs a 7-year contract. He's making $6 million a year. He's already won a Stanley Cup. And now he is just, and you see him in person. I did the two games in Winnipeg, and you see him in person. The ice that he eats up defensively, he kills penalties, he blocks shots, he's in front of the net. Just a huge asset to put around those Christmas trees of Makar and McKinnon and all the glow they have. So yeah, Brantanen wasn't even any good in the first round. And if Brantanen gets hot in the second round, it's like, man, watch out. Now, Dallas has better defenders than Winnipeg, obviously. It's a big upgrade from defense. You go to Tanev and Lindell, and you know these guys are real. And Harvey's a good young defense, but they don't have a lot of offense on their defense. Haskinen's not a dynamic offensive player. Harley had good numbers this year, but you know, not a huge threat. Not going to break you down. Not even like a Morrissey would for Winnipeg. He would be the best offensive player on Dallas if he was on that team. So again, this is going to be a defense mucky. Frustrate McKinnon and Makar as best as you can, layer after layer after layer. And, you know, Dallas is an older team. Like you mentioned, Sagan and, you know, Pavelski is, you know, Sagan's been injured, so he's older than his age, actually. You know, Robertson's not a great skater. He can get lost in a high paced game. So Dallas has to slow it down and play a mucky game, kind of how those Vegas games looked. You know, it wasn't always the best look in hockey, to tell you the truth. But that's how they got to play to win this series.
Neil, I wanted to ask you final question here on this series, in that Dallas played what I thought was a terrific third period in Game 7 Sunday evening. But now you've got the quick turnaround at home. You only have one day off, and you've got to kind of recalibrate your emotions. You're starting a series over again against a team that's got a lot of rest. Is that a major concern for Dallas that, you know, they've got to really ramp up quickly or risk the possibility of losing home ice right away?
I think it is a real risk. And I'll tell you why. And something we don't normally talk about on here, or I don't think we ever talk about it, and that is the preparation that the players get from the coaching staff for the next opponent. I remember Colin Campbell when he was coaching, and I never coached, and they have books on the other team. They went through everything with them. They had video sessions. They whether they were at home, starting at home or on the road, they prepared those players as much as they could just for that one team that they're going to see every other night for 2 weeks. And Dallas has only had one day to do this. I don't think that they were, I know for sure there's no way that Peter DeBoer and his staff were preparing Dallas for Colorado in the event that they beat Vegas. They don't do that stuff. So they would have, as soon as they beat Vegas, they would have tried to get the players' attention to turn to Colorado, and they would have been prepping like crazy for Colorado. Now, Colorado's already had a long time to prep for either Vegas or Dallas, hedge their bets and so on. Their coaching staff had a little bit more time. So, yeah, I do think game one is going to be really tough for Dallas in that they haven't had any time to detox and get ready. So, and Colorado's coming in going, here we go, boys, here we go. So I agree with your thing, Vic, your question. Yes, I think it's going to be tough in game one. They could lose home ice right away.
Go ahead, John. Finish that, and then we'll get to the predictions.
No, just Colorado's so good at home. They're a different monster at home. And they've done it all year long, the best home team in the NHL. You add the elevation in, a little tired as the team goes on in the postseason. You're getting worn down. That's when the elevation can be a bigger factor, when you're getting worn down, not feeling your best. It's a big, huge for Colorado to steal one. And I'm sure if they get one, they're gonna be hungry for number two, because then they feel like it's over. It's going to be a big challenge for Dallas, but I'm sure they had a little bit of pre-scouting. The pro scout probably started to prepare for Colorado, you know, just have something for Spot and DeBoer to look at. But they're a good tandem. They've been together a long time. Spot and DeBoer, you know, with Vegas, with going back to San Jose, and then in Vegas, and now, so there's good coaching continuity. It's a division foe. They probably have their tactics already, you know, in place for the regular season games. And I'm sure in the back of their head, okay, this is what we're going to have to do. They watch the games, you know, they go home, and that's what's great about hockey people. They'll go home and they'll turn on TV and they'll watch the games. It's what they do. And they listen to our intermissions. I get texts from coaches all the time during the regular season, during the postseason, players watching, you know, Keith Tkachuk will chime in, you know, he's watching the game to watch Madden. So it's John Cooper will text. Even while his team was still in it, he'll text once in a while saying he's watching the intermission. So that's what's cool. They go home and watch, and they've been watching Colorado. So they might just, even though they're having a beer and relaxing, there was some downloading going on in their brain on, geez, how can we bracket McKinnon here? How can we bracket McCarr? At least get him to dump the puck. Give us a chance.
So how do you see it?
Yeah, like I said, I think the overwhelming offense of Colorado is just going to be a bit too much for Dallas. You can always frustrate a team, and Colorado was frustrated last month of the season. That's why we had some trepidation with them going to Winnipeg. And would that frustration continue? And Gorgiev, and you know, is he not going to play? I mean, the guy gets pulled in game one. He's like, dude, maybe we should start the other guy. But then the other guy's sick, so they can't play him. They might have played, you know, they might have played him, but they couldn't because he was sick. So they had to go back to Gorgiev in game two. I don't think they really wanted to, but they did. Now the script is totally flipped.
Absolutely. All right. So how many games for Colorado for you?
Out of respect, like you said, I'm going to go six with them. I think they can win game six at home. You know, they can be up 3-2 and then win game six at home.
Neil?
Believe it or not, John, I actually was going to say Colorado in six before you said that. I'm not just copycatting, but the one thing I wanted to say to your comments about Colorado was that when you go into Denver, you have to elevate your game.
Uh-huh.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yes, you do.
Well,
5,200 feet of elevation.
Well, I'm going to take a little bit of solace from the fact that while Dallas may be at a little bit of a disadvantage in game one and may fall behind, that they did put up a seventh spot in their last trip into Denver. So I'm going to go off the board here, and I'm going to pick Dallas in seven to advance and really go the distance in the first two rounds and play the maximum of 14 games. So that brings us to our last series, Vancouver at Edmonton. John, I'm going to take a page out of your book, and I hope I don't screw this up. So what Pearl Jam is to having this series starting on Wednesday, Artur Schwilos is to the Beatles song She Loves You. I don't know how I did there, but who saw Artur Schwilos coming?
Yeah, the first Archer since Erbe, right? The first little Latvian goalie we've had since the 2002 Stanley Cup final, Hurricanes and Red Wings. We should know because we were there. Yes, we were. So, yeah, I felt like the path for Edmonton was really opening up with their matchups. You could see it, Vancouver, and then either Nashville. or, you know, LA and then either Nashville or Vancouver. No one had that better path. And the entire tournament had a better path than that. So here they are. They get through LA in five, like we thought. And now they get a Vancouver team, a goalie injury situation, decimation. They couldn't get any shots on goal. Maybe that because of the goalie situation that factored into their offense and style of play. I don't think so. Elias Pettersson is not a great skater. He has a hard time with pace. This is obviously going to be a pace series. You cannot slow down McKinnon. Impossible. And really, the way Leon Draisaitl was playing right now, watching him in the first round, this is a level that he's playing that he hasn't been at. Remember, he's been injured in the past, the high ankle sprain, things like he could still produce that way a couple of years ago with the high ankle sprain. But this year, he is flying. He's playing at a true by himself level. And so I just think it's too much for Vancouver. I think there's a great chance for them to be overwhelmed. This could be another 4 or 5 game series for Edmonton to stay fresh, stay energetic, stay positive to prepare for what could be a heavyweight battle in the Western Conference final. But for them, if this good path continues, you know, it would be Dallas with your prediction, Vic, beating Colorado and then getting Dallas in the conference final, which is face it, that'd be, I think that would be a better matchup for them than Colorado. They could still beat Colorado. But right now, the path is just there. And like I said, my ultimate dream sequence, not to get too far ahead, is McDavid raising the cup in Madison Square Garden for his first Stanley Cup. Of all places, that would be the place it would get the most attention. It would get the most, you know, fanfare, the most written word. It'd be on First Take and PTI. And it'd be, if McDavid of any place to win the cup, do it in New York City. This is the path. I see the path.
Well, let's put the brakes on this just a second, because Neil, as we know, and I'm not falling for this again, by the way, with a team sweeping another team, because I did it with Winnipeg against Colorado, and we saw what happened in that series. The Canucks won all 4 games against the Oilers during the course of the regular season, outscoring them 21-7. However, 3 of those 4 games were in the early part of the season when the Oilers were spinning their wheels. So I'm not taking that too seriously at this point. And oh, by the way, you know, with Draisaitl and McDavid, oh, Zach Hyman showed up and he did what he usually does, parked himself in front of the crease. Huge impact player in the opening round series against LA also.
Yeah, I think that to cut to the chase on this, I think that the Oilers will beat the Canucks. The problem that I have with the prediction is that I don't trust the Oilers. If I trusted them the way I trust Colorado, let's say, I would say that this would be 5 games and it would be done because they're overwhelming talent. I just don't trust that they don't fall asleep, and they could fall asleep right at home. They've done that during the season. They just, you know, you get these unbelievable talents and then they're snoozing and all of a sudden they've lost a game. So I think that the Oilers' talent is too much. And I think with Thatcher Demko out hurt, and nothing wrong with Arters, but I don't think he's Demko. I think that the Oilers will win this, but I think it's going to go long. I think that they're going to, Vancouver's got enough in them. You're right, John, by the way, about Pettersson. That's a big disappointment in the playoffs of what I've seen in that first round. But Besser is great. JT Miller is made all the doubting Thomases go away, that when he got that contract and everybody said Vancouver's crazy to give him that contract. And of course, Hughes is a really dynamic force back there. So I see Edmonton winning it, but I think it's going to go long and probably go 7.
And John, before you make your prediction, you know, Neil just mentioned Quinn Hughes and his ability and his lateral movement and his puck moving and everything. But boy, every time I watch Evan Bouchard, let those clappers go. I mean, that is a shot that I haven't seen from a point man since Reed Larson in the 80s where this guy just hammers. And that is something on a fearsome power play to begin with, that when you've got a guy that launches shots on a, over 90 miles an hour, you know, faster than anybody, probably since Al MacInnis, even. I mean, this is rarefied air, the way this guy shoots the puck.
Yeah, I was going to mention MacInnis as a comparable. Yeah, you know, the slap shot isn't what it used to be when we were growing up watching hockey, especially with the wood sticks. It's more of a snapshot, wrist shot league now. And so, yeah, to bring back that old-time back scratcher, it's pretty cool. And he's often, because of all the space that McDavid creates and causes defense to collapse and drysdale, he always has momentum. He's always coming into the slap shot like it's a hardest shot competition move. And that's when you get your body and you get the motion behind it, you're going to add miles per hour when you have momentum. And that's what he gets, because he's always, McDavid creates that space in the high slot where he can just step into these slap shots. And he'd have a good shot anyway. But when you can step into it with all that room because of what McDavid does, you know, it's why he really is the MVP every year, as long as he's in his prime, because he truly changes every game and everybody on his team. But yeah, I think Neil's right. I think Vancouver can make this an LA King of the last couple of years, not this postseason. Grinding. They have guys who eat pucks, Ian Cole, and he'll get in front of pucks and they'll block a million shots and they'll muck it up and they'll have 12 shots on goal early in the third period, but it'll be 2-1 and then a shot. Connor Garland will beat, you know, Brett Kulak wide and tie the game, and you know, and then they might win in overtime. So yeah, they have the potential certainly to do that. Like you said, those losses were earlier in the year with the old coach and the slow start, especially opening night. And they'd be like 7-1 opening night or something in Vancouver. Yeah, but Vancouver's a great, you know, it's a passionate city. Those games will be difficult for Edmonton. They will feel the energy, the Canucks, their power play is very good when it gets going. They have good structure, bumper for Besser. Hill, you know, JT Miller loops around like Austin Matthews and shoots downhill. You mentioned Hughes and his lateral movement is unbelievable. So yeah, it's possible there, but again, with the goaltending injury and this rested Edmonton team, and how they can taste it as they go and see the path, see the light, I think they're going to overwhelm them.
How many games?
Five. I'll go five again. Back-to-back five for Edmonton.
I'm going to give them a little bit more respect and go six. Neil, how about you?
I said seven before.
You did say seven.
But I want to add seven, one shooter onto your scary shooters list of Al MacInnis and so on. And Al MacInnis, that did scare the crap out of you. But I'll tell you who scared me. I was on the ice with him when I saw him shoot in a tournament we used to play in the summer in Vegas, and Sheldon Souris played in this thing, and he let some shots go, and I was on defense for the other team, and I'm like, get me out of here, like, this is just gonna kill you. You literally think it could kill you. So those guys that can shoot the puck like Bouchard, it's scary when you stand there and see a puck go by that fast.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's just take a break here. We'll exhale a little bit. That'll wrap up our four series preview of the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But when we come back, a very special human side of the story. This is the human side of the story, brought to you by UBS Financial Services Incorporated. And somebody really close to us retired from almost a quarter century of broadcasting last year. And John, I'm going to throw it over to you, because both me, you, Neil, very close with one Barry Melrose.
Yep, I got the shirt here. Barry had to retire after last season due to Parkinson's. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's a couple of years ago. Was able to work through it for a couple, but then that disease ultimately wins, unfortunately, like it does. And so he's retired in Florida. Started working with Barry in the spring of 1998, filling in on NHL Tonight during the playoffs. I got the hosting gig that fall, in the fall of 98, and worked with Barry ever since then, pretty much all year long, because the hockey season's a long year. We started adding college hockey into the mix in 2006, doing regional games. I started doing the Frozen Four in 2013. So we did the last 10 Frozen Fours together, culminating in Tampa, right near where he lives now, in last year's overtime win for Quinnipiac. So you had these t-shirts made up, you know, selling them and selling some Barry stuff to make some contribution eventually at the end of the year to the Michael J. Fox organization, which has done an amazing job raising awareness and trying to beat this terrible disease. And, you know, it's just sad, terrible, tragic irony of all the diseases for Barry to get. You know, I mean, what Barry's gift was his wit, his quick wit, his laughter, you know, honed certainly in the locker rooms of North America playing hockey. You better be ready. You better be quick with your mind. And not, no one was quicker than Barry. He was phenomenal on TV. He was a natural, he had natural talent. Didn't have natural talent on the ice, but he had natural talent in front of the camera. He was the absolute star, the, really the most recognizable and television hockey broadcaster in the United States, in the history of the NHL. It would be Barry Melrose, you know, in the United States. No one's more recognizable was a rock star like Barry, mainly because of a SportsCenter relationship. And he was able, more people were able to see him there and all across America. So it was great to hang with him, miss him dearly. And yeah, again, just a sad irony when I think about that and what he's going through and the challenges that he has right now with Parkinson's and other related things. It's just not good. You know, it really isn't. And you smile when you think about the memories, but when you think about the reality, it really is tragic and sad and makes me sick. But like I said, it's good to keep his image alive. And like I tell people, just, I mean, how many people could have an image of them with no nose, eyes, but you know who it is instantly, you know, within a second, no mouth, no nose, no nothing, but you know who it is. It's Barry Melrose. And that because he's an icon. He's a television NHL icon just from the figure he cut. And we miss him very much. And of course, I know, Neil, you have a relationship with him going way back. Not only, of course, Barry became great friends with John Saunders, who was, of course, a great buddy of yours. That's one link that you guys also had was John. And then, of course, professionally, you were there when Barry finished up his playing career and got into coaching through the Red Wing and the Adirondack organization.
Yeah, I was the general manager of Adirondack Red Wings in 1985-86, and Barry had been sent down to the Adirondack by the Red Wings. He'd played his last couple of years with the Red Wings. I think we signed him as a free agent out of Toronto. And by the time we got to the 86 playoffs, Bill Dineen, who's a wonderful guy, he was a wonderful coach, a winning coach, knew how to win, took Barry under his wing and had him as an assistant coach. And Barry didn't dress every game in the Calder Cup Finals in Hershey, Pennsylvania, because the younger guys were playing. And Barry and I spent a lot of time together. And so that image on the T-shirt is not the image that I remember of Barry, because I remember Barry as a player when he was a lot more conservative looking, let's say. He didn't have the long mullet and he didn't have the big gray suits on and he didn't, you know, he was a few pounds lighter, and but he was the kind of guy in hockey, as a hockey player, as a hockey coach, that would do whatever it took to win. And if that meant not playing after having an NHL career, not playing in the American League in the Calder Cup playoffs, that's okay, as long as we were going to win. So we won the Calder Cup in 1986. Barry went on from there. A few years later, he was a coach of the Seattle Thunderbirds of the WHL. He won the championship out in Seattle. And after a couple of years there, he came back to the Adirondack Red Wings to replace Bill Dineen as the coach of the Detroit's number one farm team. I was gone to New York, and lo and behold, he coached the Adirondack Red Wings to their last Calder Cup, their fourth Calder Cup, and he and that series that he won. You may know this, John. Every win for both sides were on the road. So they won four road games. The other team won three road games, and Barry Melrose won it there. And then, of course, from there, he goes on to get the LA Kings job. And what happens? He was only a couple games away from a Stanley Cup with the LA Kings. So he knew how to win. It came later in his career. You know, it came, I think, because of Bill Dineen and because of those experiences you have with Russ Farwell, with the Seattle Thunderbirds. But I'm glad we're all together because I knew him well in the 80s and the early 90s. You guys knew him well in the late 90s and into the 2000s. And a terrific guy, always had something funny to say. Close with Saunders. I had to unfortunately be the one that called him and told him that John had passed. That was a tough phone call. But anyway, good on you, John, for doing that for Barry. If there's anything I can do to help with that, I'm here to help.
Ditto. And just great memories. And, you know, before we say goodbye for this week, you know, I met Barry in 1994. And one of the first things that he had said was that he wanted to take me out to get suits like his. And anybody that has seen me from the waist down knows that nobody has a worse build for those suits than I do. So just phenomenal memories of Barry. And we continue to support him in the fight. We love him. And hopefully he's tuning in and watching us on the podcast. So that will wrap it up for the second round preview edition of NHL Wraparound. Thanks to Migray, UBS, and Ninsel Financial Partners. Thanks to our listeners. Send questions or comments to NHLWraparound@gmail.com. Special thank you once again to our friend John Buccigross for joining us once more. And don't forget, our website is up and running, NHLWraparound.com. We've got our newsletter, polls, all of our episodes are there. So check it out, and we will see you again next week.
Thanks for joining us on the NHL Wraparound Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date on all the NHL action.